Okay, looks like we have a quorum, so I'll go ahead and call the order of the Tarrant County 911 District Board of Managers regular meeting for Monday, May 17th, 2021. Go ahead and move into agenda announcements.
There are no announcements.
Okay, so we'll immediately welcome our new board member, Chief Sergeant. Chief, you want to introduce yourself to everyone?
Sure, thank you. Julie Swearingen, Assistant Chief of Fort Worth PD. I've been in the department for 26 years over Finance and Personnel Bureau. Thank you.
Very excited you're here.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move right into the consent agenda. Any discussion on the consent agenda?
Move approval.
Have a motion?
Second.
And a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Move into Section 5, the Assistance Program, ESAP Assistance.
Two this month for y'all. One is an ESAP assistance for the City of Fort Worth Fire Department to upgrade their fire, like not TV monitors, software to replace all the monitoring they do with the fire department. And that's for $33,714.
Any discussion, any questions from the board?
Chief Swearingen, you want to abstain from voting on this, it's involved Fort Worth?
Yes.
I do want to clarify, it's actually for the software, but not was the last one. The spot fire analytical software that they use to run all the response reports and times for that being saved.
You know what that software is? I'm sorry, you? No, I don't use it. I have no familiarity with this.
What kind of software is it?
I believe it's for like response times and different routing protocols, I believe. I've never heard of the company myself. But it's analytics, statistics. Audit type software, so I guess it'd be for the FD, reporting software.
It attaches to the existing CAD program they have, is what you're saying?
I would believe so, if it's going to be pulling this type of data.
I think they're a Tri-Tech CAD, is that right?
Is it Tri-Tech still? Yes, yeah.
We have a motion?
Make a motion to approve.
Motion by the mayor?
Second.
Second by Mr. Brunson, all those in favor?
Aye.
One abstention?
Yes.
Chief Swearingen. All right.
Second's going to be for the radio availability for $29,898. It's to upgrade the Hurst Nice Inform recording solution.
Make a motion for approval.
Motion by Chief Spivey, second.
Second.
Brunson? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Travis. Looks like we're moving to item number 6, public power pool update.
Good afternoon, everyone. Last week in the B3 monthly technical committee meeting, B3 advised that they have gathered around 90% of the members' data, and they are working on getting the remaining 10% to respond to Cavallo's letter, in which Cavallo wants us to provide the additional details for the basis of our dispute. B3 also advised that we need to, members need to hold the line and continue the dispute by paying the current charges only. B3 is also working on alternative options for the members, one of which was Cavallo is offering to work out a plan to spread the exaggerated charges over the remaining 20 months of the contract. Other than discovering billing calculation errors under the market rates, the only other potential source of billing relief is judicial action. B3 advised that at least 35 lawsuits have been filed against related to the market intervention.
And our dollar amount is $5,000?
No, it's about six.
$6,000? Any comments or questions from the board?
Has P3 made any heavy discussions about if this does go to a legal matter, then potentially listing Caballo as bypassing them from competing in the next contract?
They haven't made any comments like that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wayne, do you have anything?
I have nothing on this. I've asked Shinar and Anil to just monitor this through P3. We're looking to them for their recommendation before we take any action. We will come back to the board with whatever action needs to be taken in that regard. But obviously, they're representing a number of entities that are in the same situation we are, and we look to them to see whether or not they have any suggestions. And I also wanted the legislative session to finish out. I know the legislature's been distracted on other issues, but we were hopeful that there might be some relief that came through that. But I don't see any reason to jump right now. Let's just write it out, and we'll make whatever decision we have to at the appropriate time.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, vehicle policy review.
We had tabled that because we stopped driving during the COVID, so I want to add it back to the consideration. If you guys want more chance, if we could, to look it over for next month, then go ahead and have that approved.
Any comments from the board on the vehicle policy? Okay, we'll talk about it next month. So let's go ahead and move into presentation and updates.
Good afternoon. Sol Moreno, gas manager here. Talked to you all before, a little bit last year, even about this presentation, but just kind of want to bring it back to mind is we're all, in the world, still moving towards NG911, you know, for services and the roles that GIS plays in those calls, call routing, and mapping in general. So just kind of want to take real quick through. A lot of these slides may be familiar. There's not going to be any questions along the way, but basically, right now, the Tarrant County 911 GIS department, I manage team of four, and we have a lot of experience in bringing in some new talent as well that has been able to contribute very quickly. So our primary function is to provide GIS mapping data that is integrated with the E911 system and is already, has been installed and in use at the public safety answering points throughout the district. So again, through this map local picture, just kind of highlight where we're fitting at in this realm of things. So this is not my photo, but I thought it was pretty cool. So. Everything that I do starts with data. Me and my department, it's whether it's spatial data or tabular data, it all comes together. We start layering things together, and it's just kind of interesting where they're all separate and unique, but when you start putting them together, you can actually start doing cross analyzation, queries, point polygon searches. That's basically how 911 calls are going to start routing. Through location-based routing is where they actually pop up. So what we have to do to make all that work is convert the real world into a digital world. And we do that by creating, again, these layers and converting everything into point, line, polygon. The whole world, everything we see and do can be put into one of these three data types. And, you know, points for like address points, polygons for parcels or boundaries, lines, you know, streets. You start bringing it together, the world starts kind of coming together. You put the orthos on it, and all of a sudden, you have a lot of information that is very quickly accessible for analyzation, again, for routing. There's a lot lot of stuff that we can do with this, but this is basically how a lot of 911 call on my side is working. Behind the points, lines, polygons has to be information, and that's the attribute table. So that contains all the information that you need to know as far as the street names, you know, the directionals, what community is it in. A few times it's come up, what exchange is it in? If the exchange center goes down, they have to know the area that that services. So these attributes are what can be mapped. We obtain our data from a variety of sources. We do a lot in-house through GPS work, data collection, field verifications, heads up digitizing, which is a process of creating or manipulating the data based on the aerial imagery, which is why that is so important, that the imagery that we get is quality. We do get updates from member cities and other resources. Anything we get, we verify it, standardize it, validate it, and integrate it. So in all, my small group manages a total of 203 different data layers, many of which are used at the PSAPs. Center lines, access points, trails, trail markers, mile markers, boundaries, just ad nauseum. There's a lot that we try to account for to give call takers a clearer of a picture and the best routing analysis as possible. Once the addresses and the information is entered into the NSAG, we start off entering it into the NSAG, which, if you're not familiar, is the database that all the addressing is queried against. As all the streets, the ranges, again, communities, and so when new address requests are made, then we can validate and make sure it's already, you know, good in the system. Otherwise, you can end up with someone trying to get an address that is not serviced or recognized by anybody, which will then therefore lead to a lot of confusion. So obviously we're updated with new construction, changes to street names, extending, reducing the ranges, political or ESD changes. And by political, meaning annexations, de-annexations, boundary swaps, there's a lot that goes on with that. So once we get it into the NSAG, we bring it into GIS. We've got two examples here of the type of information that we get. We've got an address letter on the left from the city of Fort Worth and a address plat on the right, again from the city of Fort Worth. These tell us information as far as what the new address is. On the address letter, it'll often reference an address. A lot of times it'll tell you if it's replacing it, adding on to it, but at least gives you a place to dial in. On the plat, everything that we can possibly need is there. Again, it tells us the municipality, we've got the street names, the correct spellings, the appropriate block ranges, addresses that are assigned to which part. A lot of times as you're jumping intersections, it's not uncommon to go from Hurstview Court to Hurstview Drive. They may be sharing the same 900 block. It's critical to know where that line in the sand is between the two of them. So a lot of times we do have to come back to these, and you know, we've had a number of cases where they want, can't you just put it in? We're telling you it's good. No. I need something documentable that I can track and fall back to if there's a problem. Again, after it's entered into the GIS, we then do all our validations. The ALI, NSAG, and GIS databases all must be in sync for that call to route, start and finish properly. Maintenance is critical. If you're going to build it but not maintain it, not really much point in having it. So it's not maintained, it gets out of date very, very quickly. MENA has a recommended standard for an ALI to GIS match with phone records of a 98% minimum matching. I can gladly and confidently say that with, you know, over a million records, we've been at 99.22% successful match on those ALI records. That's taken a lot of time, work, effort. We have a lot of pride. But that's never seen as a finishing line. It's a starting line. It doesn't matter how close to 100 it gets, it's a starting line. We want to just keep pushing and getting it better and better. And then the accuracy and timeliness that we can apply to these are the reasons that we create and validate so much of this data in-house. that. Other duties that we perform are digital data distributions. So any of our member cities, we're happy to share our data to whatever extent that helps. We work with Fort Worth GIS Department, Trinity Metro, MedStar, Tarrant County, Tarrant County Health, Appraisal, and even regional districts like Denver 911, NCT 911. Just to make sure that all of those boundaries and streets are kind of matching up well and it doesn't just drop off the island. We also do hard copy map production requests. One of the main ones that we get, a lot of cities have their own mapping and GIS departments, but we do a lot with the fire marshal and Randy Brendel. I just seem to have a good relationship there, and we're happy to do that for anyone that we can. Lastly, we participate in community assistance projects wherever possible. The Tarrant County College, I'm on the GIS program advisory board for that. NEFTA, on the regional response, Tarrant County elections, public health. I mean, just the list goes on. We really try to be engaged and share that data. Our cities are good sharing it with us. If there's anything we can do to help distribute and bring that back and make it useful for them, we like to do that. A lot of times they come to us, some of the agencies and cities do, because we are a larger regional area and they know the quality. So if they need to start working with their neighbors, they know that we're going to have that data. So that's, you know, it's just something that we really like to help out with. Other projects that we've got going on are continuing to work on sub-addresses, focusing right now on apartments, suites. We'll then be moving on to like college campuses, school campuses, and you know, government, wherever we can take that. We're also trying to classify our address points, trying to make that a little bit more useful. Instead of just having an address, now we can start saying, this is a residential structure, these are apartments. Something tells me, no apartment outside of it, but fire response might be, or police response, a little different, headed for a multifamily versus a single family structure. So if we can start making those event centers, things like that, a little more useful, more helpful, that's what we want to do. Obviously, you've heard a lot of talk from us about the Z-axis and elevation information. We're still actively working on solutions, testing, that is ongoing. Text 911. Imagery, you all heard a lot about even last month.
Yeah, let me stop at the Z-axis real quick.
Yes, sir.
Ongoing, do we have a projected timeline associated with that?
Not exactly. We've been working with Gina, and I'm on a 3D working group headed up by Brandon Adley. And right now, all of the mandates have been on the wireless carriers to start providing the data, but there's been nothing on us to be able to do with it yet. No requirements. We kind of have to know what they're giving us before we can do something with it. So as we've been hearing development come along, that's where we've been trying to test a couple different options and say, well, this is foolproof. You know, there's things that we can do to at least start getting there. So at this time, unfortunately,
we can't even get the vendors to agree what they're going to reflect to us, whether it be height above the roof, so sea level, et cetera, et cetera. So we definitely don't want to put something out there to the key setups and have you guys have giant calculators trying to figure out exactly what that number means on what floor or whatever. So we are working, as Phil said, with on a national level with various groups, but also with our neighbors in the city, in the state, to see what other people are working on. So we don't want to be caught unawares, but we also know we have an uphill battle.
I think even as recently as February and March, the wireless carriers were just saying, here's some of the stuff we're testing and pushing through. All we can tell you is that in a month from now, it's not going to look like this. We can't tell you what it is going to look like, but it's not going to look like this.
Yeah, they all say they can do it. They just don't refer to a standard.
Yes, and unfortunately, one of the issues that I have as a data person is so much of what they're doing is proprietary, and so they don't have to show their work. So if they say, trust us, my hands are tied, I'll trust but verify to the extent that I can. I would much rather see the work, not because I'm trying to make a buck off of it. I'd like to know how it's being generated. So, Mr. Brunson, did you have a...
How is text 911 location data different than regular mobile call data?
The old methodology was that the cell towers and sectors were pre-routed or pre-assigned, and the tower could physically be in one jurisdiction, but feeding calls outside of that jurisdiction to another one,
right,
just based on, you know, routing of that path or the likelihood of who might be better served answering it. What the location-based routing does is a point polygon query, so that when the call comes through, it takes that X, Y of the cellular caller, says, okay, where is it? What boundary is it in? Oh, it's in the city of Arlington. Okay, we're going to send it there, rather than auto-sending it to, you know, Fort Worth or Irving, Grand Prairie. What it's done in our testing that we've seen is reduced those call transfers by upwards of 40%. Each transfer, on average, has about a 45-second delay that it adds to that call. So again, when we extrapolated out the advantage of LBR technology across the entire district for all of wireless carriers, we were looking at a potential estimation of 5 million seconds saved, that just in our district, simply by not having to transfer those calls based on the auto or pre-programmed routing.
But that's for all wireless communication, not just text 911.
Right.
Text 911 was the first initiative for actual point polygon-based, location-based routing specifically for texting. Phil's also talking about the LBR location-based routing, which we've got one of the wireless carriers that is actually routing voice calls that way now. So there's two different initiatives there. They kind of are very similar, but they are separate. Texting is already pretty much started that way, and it's been that way.
So it started up with texting, but it's going to propagate across, and we're seeing potential for it to have other applications and savings.
Great answer.
So again, being active in NENA, again, I'm on a 3DGIS working group. We've got a data model, actually version 2, merged service boundary center lines and data flow, just to name a few. We're trying to keep very active engaged with the industry, and not just monitoring it, but we're actively participating and helping drive that. So it's neat to be a part of that. Now the morning part, some of the numbers, but in the last 12 months, again, over 400 plats and new plats, 500 address letters, inside records, 2,500 street segments, 15,000 new address points. I did check, because this is not including sub-addresses that we've been working on for the suites and apartments. Didn't put it in here, but we've added another 43,000 sub-addresses, again, just in the last 12 months. So my team is cranking right along. So we've got a lot to be proud of what they're accomplishing in quality and quantity. Again, on the telemetry update, that's something I've talked a few times with y'all about. The 2020 imagery, the base imagery has come through. We're looking at it, so we're going to make use of it. They are nearing completion of the AccuPlus post-processing. And they're also going to be doing all the file conversions for us this time, so that when we get our deployment, we're going to be able to basically hit the ground running with getting that aerial imagery updated to PSAPs. Y'all have seen these images before, but again, this can be a little distracting to a call taker trying to see this and make sense of what's going on. Other than MC Escher, he might be impressed, but from a public safety standpoint, I don't see this being really that valuable on the uncorrected side. A little bit clearer to see is the highway interchanges. I've done this for a long time, and looking at that uncorrected imagery, and that what that is the auto splicing of the aerial photographs. They just run it through an algorithm, it pins them together, it doesn't see that as being a big problem, high priority, so that's what takes a big hit on that quality. Corrected-wise, it looks perfect, exactly as it should be. Again, if you have a caller stranded, somewhere in one of those Wix Masters, I really think that that corrected version is going to be much more helpful. And because, you know, we're talking about photometry, I like pictures, I like data, I'm a data nerd. But, so it's not only cool and fun to look at and all that, but it is extremely helpful to our work. There's a lot that we can do with this. So I thought the globe light field, take you a little bit of a walk back through that would be kind of a neat little see. It's an unintended benefit, but when we get imagery year after year, these are the kinds of things that we can start to put together. So 2017, we're starting off with the parking lot. 19, and what you got is an overhead view and then the oblique view, which is the angle, so you can see things, again, kind of that bird's eye. Making lots of production or progress in just 2 years. 2020 on the ortho, the straight down, and then to 2021, I mean, 4 years, you're talking parking lot to a structure to that. Well, I thought it was, you know, neat to get the panoramic. And again, this is the type of imagery with the engine on one that can start coming through with picture updates. Maybe they're not sending a panoramic. Maybe it's a section or somewhere in the ramps, you know, which is a problem or a need. Those are things that they can start sending. So I thought the picture update turned out pretty well, and you know, it is a beautiful part. Then just to wrap that up, again, we've got, including me, 5 staff, 2.2 million people, 1.1 million alley records, and we currently have an accuracy of 99.22%. So, as so much is being driven off the GIS data, I'm hoping that the 99, you know, conveys a lot of confidence in, you know, what we're doing. So we're, again, not a finish line, it's a starting point. So, sorry to run through that pretty quick. I just know that the presentation, y'all seen it before, but you know, most of y'all had, so just wanted to touch them on.
No.
Again, on.
Good to see it. Good to see it.
Thank you.
Good questions? Okay. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
That's what I think, y'all.
All right, we'll move to the executive director's report.
Just up to the next board meeting will be June 21st.
And you're going to cover for Bill, I guess?
Yes, sir. Okay. He's not in a sleeping bag in a corner. He probably has been all week and will be for the next 5 or so days, so Bill was not able to be with us. But he did send us highlights of the three bills that directly affect 911. One of the bills, House Bill 768, that is a bill that will require all telecommunicators in the state to be trained during their basic licensing or continue education courses on how to coach cardiopulmonary resuscitation or CPR over the phone, otherwise known as TCPR. And TCO would be required to adopt these rules implementing such training. This bill has passed both the House and the Senate and has been sent to the governor for signature. We do not know the odds and ends of that bill. However, we have budgeted for that training, and we'll talk about the budget for next year. We will be...
You mean we have cities that don't do this already in our jurisdiction?
Yes. We have a significant amount of folks that are police dispatchers only, police call takers and dispatchers only that are not TCPR certified.
Or for those agencies that don't do emergency medical dispatch, which that CPR is required. What is the thought process on when we're going to try to offer that? Obviously, a good place for that may be around the time we do the basic licensing, but what's the thought process on when we might offer that?
So right now we're waiting for the bill to come out to see what grandfathering, what time limits and all that good stuff. Currently as it is written, it is required to be part of the basic, so anybody new that comes in, it'll be automatically part of that. For the several hundred of folks that are already licensed that we're going to have to certify, those logistics would have to work out once the law has been put out and we'll have a chance to review what time frame and window we have and what resources we have to get it done. The next House bill, 788, that is the one that makes emergency service dispatchers eligible to participate and Public Safety Employee Treatment Court. This bill passed both the House and the Senate and have been sent to Governor Abbott's desk for signature. And lastly, House Bill 2911, which is the next generation 911 wireless funding and reliability bill. Originally filed to allow 911 entities throughout the state to set their own wireless fee at a choice rate of 75 cents, $1, or $1.25. However, based on concern from the carriers and members of the legislature, this bill was changed to raise a fee from 50 cents to 75 cents on a statewide basis. This substitute bill also incorporates language that allows Greater Harris County a lesser rate due to its size. In addition, the committee substitute also adds a definition of next generation 911 service as provided in the federal statute and provides a target implementation date for statewide next generation 911 services by September 1st of 2025. The committee substitute passed the House on May 7th by a vote of 103 to 40, with one present not voting. It was referred to the Senate Business and Commerce Committee on May 13th. We expect to have a hearing on this bill and we'll be working to encourage committee members to vote the bill out as soon as possible.
So, Bill is telling me that Senator Hancock is managing this in the Senate? Correct?
This one, yes.
Okay. Does anyone here have a relationship with Kelly? Senator Hancock?
He's our senator, but I have no relationship with him.
Okay.
Although I sent him a number of emails and letters and I've yet to be acknowledged.
Communications.
Okay. Not that I'm bitter or anything.
No. I'm glad it's just political stuff.
Anything else on that, Shar?
Sure.
Well, we'll keep trying. Keep doing it. Sending Senator Hancock a letter. Hopefully it'll do some good. Okay, so we'll move to 2022 budget review. Overview.
Okay. For the first time in 3 years, we have nothing exciting. We're terming this year a center down year to allow all the changes that we've made over the last 3 years to settle down, sink in, and get up and functioning well. We will have completed or be almost complete the new network layout that we began that will be replacing the previous network. And outside of that, as I mentioned, we did add some additional calls for potentially having to certify quite a few hundred telecommunicators and CPR. We've looked at some various cost-cutting ways, and then as well as if we had to fund the certification and train the trainer and all that good stuff ourselves. So we added that. We also moved the incentives and gifts and et cetera that are given to the training program has moved up to 5211, which is where you see the increase there, as well as the incentives going on holidays have been added in there. Outside of that, you'll see an increase in training because of COVID. A lot of our folks, especially our new IT folks, have not received different types of training that they really needed. So we're getting them started with Cisco training, Motorola training, and some other training. So that's been added. We, and I can have Anil verify this, because we reduced the amount of retirement last year, we are required this year to pay
10.44% our required rate has increased.
10.44, correct?
Yes.
Okay, just that, so you'll see the rate change there as far as retirement goes. So far, the revenue received from the new fare increase are coming in pretty consistent. We're not seeing, we're still struggling with a couple carriers, but they're mostly small with the changes. But outside of that, nothing significant, no big projects, nothing disruptive, I should say, going on this particular budget year.
So we're projecting a surplus this year, next year, and the ongoing years versus our previous projection.
That is correct. And the budget is broken out operating versus capital, as was previously requested by the Commissioner's Court. So as you'll see, if you notice on page 25, your capital budget, you'll see this year we're finishing the payments of the CPE project. So next year we don't anticipate any unusual capital expenditures.
Mr. Brunson, anything we need to hear from the commissioners?
Not yet. And I do appreciate the listing of the revenues that we've received. But before we set our rate next year, I would still like to see each of the buckets. How much is from each of the buckets that we have from each of the carriers? Because if I look at the math, it with our current rate structure, everything ought to be divisible by 0 or 25. And we've got a lot of odd numbers here. But I can talk to you about that later if you want more clarification. I do have two questions. First one is, building improvements has gone down substantially, projected. Does that mean that we're getting pretty good shape with this building?
That is the plan. COVID definitely slowed us down. We're halfway through the project. We had hoped to start earlier in the year, but got delayed. There are some significant manpower shortages for construction right now. And since our project is rather small, we are kind of being treated like the redheaded stepchild. But we did have a meeting with the designer of the building on Friday, letting them know that we do have contractual obligations. So hopefully we'll get that done. Once we are done that section, we should be fully in ADA compliance as well. We had several things there that we were out of compliance. Those have been fixed, so we should be good.
And then the second one is the legal fees have been greatly reduced.
We moved.
We don't need Wayne as much anymore.
Fingers crossed we won't need it, no. We have previously had the fees that we paid the Alliance. The Alliance Director's legal team, we previously had that in the category, and we moved that down to $54.29. So we left this category just the legal fees within the district, not those that we pay out to the legal team for the Alliance Directors.
Okay.
Anything else? Anything else for you?
That's it.
All right, with that, I guess we'll go ahead and move into executive session. Pursuant to Chapter 551, Texas Government Code, Section 551. All right, we'll call the meeting back into open session. Executive meeting is over. Executive session is over. Do you have any public comment? Do you want to set a note for the agenda? The executive director will call another board meeting for next Monday on the 24th, 12 o'clock. And we'll add items to the agenda this week for that.
Anything? I'm sorry, Monday the 24th at what time?
12 o'clock. Okay. Any comments from the board? All right, then we'll call the session adjourned. Thank you.
Y'all have a good week. Stay dry.
Thank you, you too.
Indoor outdoor ceremony.